I'm Hannah, and this is Graveyard Gathering, my own little writing graveyard where things are aged, knocked over, and imperfect. A place for my work as a necromancer to explore all of the things with death and great morbidity and, I'm sure, lots of grave mistakes. Come gather around. I'd love to talk to you. This episode starts in such a weird place because at first it starts off with a television show that is no longer on air. Why? Because I like old TV. So some of my friends might know that I have this weird hyperfixation with firefighters, but if you didn't know that, I have a weird hyperfixation with firefighters. It's because when I was little, I wanted to be a firefighter or a cowboy. And that's the funny thing about autistic folks' relationships with gender. I wanted to be a cowboy. I was 4 years old and I straight up looked at my mother and went, 4 years old, with the deepest fucking crazy voice, I want to be a cowboy, mama. It freaked her the fuck out. Anyway, it's part of why I identify as non-binary. Although I still use plenty of she, her pronouns, and I talk about being a woman because, again, autistic relationships, maybe I'm gender fluid. I don't fucking know my personal identity, and it's not particularly relevant to any further part of this podcast, so I'm going to stop. So what old-ass TV show am I talking about? Rescue Me, because I enjoy Dennis Leary. And see, I like watching shows about firefighters, but the modern ones drive me nuts because that's not how any of that anything ever works. Rescue Me will occasionally irritate me because no firefighter puts on their breathing apparatus equipment in a fucking fire. That shit is on their face before they hit smoke. And Dennis Leary's character would have an entire host of policies written about him on how you don't freelance on scenes. But why do I love that show? Well, I'm a necromancer, and Dennis Leary's character is, he's not a necromancer, but he's sort of so plagued with his PTSD that he will see trauma victims. One of them he talks to and has, like, because it's his ex-best friend, so he talks to his best friend who's dead and has a relationship with his ghost, but will also frequently just be visited upon by the ghosts of trauma victims that he wasn't able to save. Having both PTSD, having a husband who has PTSD, and being a necromancer, that concept period just really appealed to me. Specifically because it reminded me a lot of my partner. My husband is not a firefighter, but he is a veteran. And my husband was in a combat experience. He was not an infantry MOS, but he was in a combat experience. And it took him 10 years to even tell me about it. My husband was not an infantry MOS, and he was an 18-year-old kid in the National Guard, and frequently our National Guard guys got sent over for long tours of duty. My husband was 7 months in Afghanistan, and it was bad at the, you know, it was bad at the end. So when my husband was explaining to me his PTSD, he will talk about one of his big triggers is children screaming, which we have three kids, and they scream a lot. So he has been faced with that continual trigger for so much of his fatherhood. And he tried to shoulder that because he never wanted the trauma to bleed onto his kids. He never, ever wanted his kids to be touched by that kind of darkness. So he would not even tell me. But I'd be like, dude, I watch you sleep. I can, your trigger finger has twitched every time you've been asleep since we've been married, bruh. So in my husband's combat summary, it talks about the fact that he helped save not only fellow soldiers, but civilians. There are plenty of vets I've met that are really, really racist and specifically do not like Islamic people. And my husband likes to make those folks come correct real fast. My husband fell in love with the Afghani people and found them to be incredibly wonderful, and and if we look at the news from this year, when troops were pulled out of Afghanistan this year, my partner sat and shook and cried and shook and cried. Sorry about that buzz. But my partner was bawling because he's like, I wrecked my mind and permanently injured my body for those children that were behind the door that I was stationed at trying to protect. And now they're probably dead. So I've talked a little bit. I'm hoping this will be the episode my husband agrees to the interview. He would like to be interviewed for the podcast, but because of some of the things that we touch on, it really has to be when he's in the emotional space to talk. My partner is a Norse pagan, but he has a kind of more Unitarian and sometimes shamanistic belief. He is ancestrally San Carlos Apache Nation. He did not grow up with that culture, but it is his ancestry in the same way that I did not get to grow up with Baltic paganism or Baltic Remova, but that is a part of me that I, so that, you know, we just choose, we don't speak for those communities, but we get the blessing of being hereditarily a part of them. My husband is very, very proud of his indigeny and the nation that he hails from. That has been one of the things that has helped save him and re-energize him. You will find us to be the type of people who are hate the suits, love the boots. Both of us are very anti-war. At the same time, we're also very pro helping people, and sometimes you have to help people with violence. I talk about some of this backstory because it becomes relevant when my husband gets to sharing his sacred story and the way that we are practicing death witches together. Even though he doesn't identify that way, in practice and what it looks like and how, when it comes to helping and explaining things to other people, that is what it is. My partner has the perspective of having helped people greet their maker. So I've seen my husband in past lives. I also know who he is ancestrally. I know how there could be different factors. I think that my husband is, in his archetype, a warrior. He is very good at violence. That action is not without ghosts. You will never find my partner being one to glorify violence. Oh, he and I both enjoy a gory, like, action movie. I always talk about, like, why I liked the show. I think it was called Priest or something. I love an artful violence, all right? But when it is in a fantasy setting, that is a healthy expression of aggression. It is very different, and we are both very against violence in its action, say in the home. We try not to be violent in our speech with our children, much less violent in actions. Hitting our children or striking a family member is like anathema in our culture, even though we might enjoy, like, a really bloody video game. Like, I love playing Fallout 76 and, you know, some first-person shooter games or different things. Shoot, rooty tooty point and shooties are fun. Engaging in healthy acts of aggression is fun. My husband and I spar when we exercise. Those are all healthy expressions. But real violence, that's the whole thing. And we take that all the way down to the point of how we talk to each other and how we relate to each other. My husband has never, ever, 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 ever once even called me a name. He has never, I think the closest he ever got was, like, "You're behaving very bitchy," but he would never even so much as call me a bitch. He respects me and loves me and cherishes me to the point that calling me names and swinging violence at me, he would knock somebody's teeth out for that. But I also understand the spiritual presence of my husband, and as violent as he can be in life, he is as equally capable in spirit. You follow me? You follow me? Don't get caught up in a trap of not understanding who you are and getting lost in ego or machismo. And that might be, I don't want to pick on machismo because I think there is good having masculine spirit. But their toxicity, it's getting caught up in your ego and not understanding who you are. Because when you understand who you are and you understand exactly the lengths that you are capable of going to, you don't need to fucking prove yourself to anything or anybody. That includes entities. That kind of shit follows you from the physical to the spiritual. That is why people who are big fucking talkers in life and big egos and fucking wild out, who don't know who they are, they just talk a big game, but they don't have the fucking nuts to back it up. That shit follows into the spiritual too. Be self-aware, not fucking cocky.
And so that is why I'm always about practice, 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 work on yourself. Like, why do I fucking walk and pray all the goddamn time? Well, because I noticed my body got really unhealthy and I have to be doing something with my energy and I have to be planting into my wards and I have to be training myself physically and mentally and spiritually and walking around and fucking praying and walking around and fucking manifesting starts to solve it, me giving me a practice of all of them fucking things. So that's why I just really advocate for meditative. God, this whole entire podcast is just an enjoyment of me rambling so far. So if you're 10 minutes into this, I didn't have a good direction today. I just had creative energy. So this particular episode is creative energy vomit, and I'm trying to keep it on theme. So, I mean, take and leave it. It's whatever, guys. There's only like 5 of you here. So mwah, love you big. As above, so below, what you reap, you will sow. Who you are stays who you are. And so if you want to go be in spiritual places and play around goofy stupid and you don't have the goddamn stones and energy and practice to back up what the fuck you be doing, something can make you come correct real quick. And just generally just a matter of time. If you walk around the spiritual world and you don't go out picking bar fights with anybody, maybe you don't get knocked around. It really just depends on how you run your mouth. If you only play in the shallow waters, you may not get knocked around. It really, again, depends on how you run your mouth. But the reason my husband was selected as my keeper for ritual is not simply because he's conveniently my partner. I married him and do spiritual things with him because he's who he is. And it's funny, but when we got married, we were already into the spiritual shit. I knew I wanted that man, mind, body, spirit, and soul. You know, Young Ma, or M.A., Young M.A., she has a song, Ooh, and one of my favorite lyrics of that song is, I'm gonna rap, it's gonna be terrible. Like, I ain't always keep a hammer next to me. Like, I ain't got a hitter to the left of me. Yo, we up in these streets more than sesame. I have just guaranteed that I will not listen to this episode because I have rapped upon it. So I manifest a lot with that song, except that I'm really careful with it. So, for example, my husband is the hitter to the left of me, and he frequently is always to the left of me. And I do keep a hammer next to me, and I'm walking these streets and praying, and I'm more than fucking sesame, man. However, I do have a dead spirit named Stephanie, and I will just never, ever sing the lyric with her name in it because I find it really disrespectful. And so I listen to that song a lot, and I manifest to it, but I never say the Stephanie part. Because I think it's really rude. And even though I would just mean it very generally or what, I just can't make that insult and I can't say that. And I have a dead person named Stephanie. So I just can't ever be disrespectful in the song with her name in it. But I pray and I manifest with that song. And my partner is definitely the hitter to the left of me. I know exactly how strong he is. I've watched him fight. I've fighted him myself, only in sparring. My husband would not ever engage in physical fighting with me on any sort of like actual level. But we've sparred. I've seen him fight. He's legit. He do be getting older though, but he's still got it, man. He looks at me, he's like, I am 32 years old. I'm in my prime. I'm over here in the prime of life. Younger than him, and unfortunately only in my prime of life. But you want a keeper that you know can control a situation. You want to be, if you're going to be an active ritual with someone that you expect to be able to take the situation from you and handle it, they got to know as much as you and they got to be able to hit harder than you, or at least as hard as you can, because you shouldn't be going in waters where you can't hit back hard enough. Don't summon what you can't banish, baby. I thankfully only get cocky about my husband when somebody grabs my ass at a bar and I know that he could lay them the fuck out. And then he probably, like, I get real cocky off of the mouth and he ends up just carrying me out like little tiger. Like, come on, sit down, little tiger. I'll take care of this. He is much fightier than me. I tend to punch with both hands, but I can shoot just fine. I don't know. I've had to be in spiritual situations where like you could not hesitate and you had to have balls. And if you were not going to engage in something physical, you were not going to engage like that, then get the fuck out. And when we were on a spooky walk one time and something, I kind of think it was a hide behind. I feel pretty sure now it was a hide behind, but It was behind us. It was above and behind us, black and moving faster than it could be able to account for. But it was in areas where there were no trees, unless it was in very, very distant trees, because something that we could not yet see until we moved was lobbing huge branches, like branches the size of my legs, out of nowhere, and then like rocks that were the size of my head dropping out of the ether right behind us, almost on our legs and heels, trying to scare us out of the fucking cemetery. So after the third one dropped out of the ether behind us to scare the shit out of us, Himbo was like, I am not packing right now. Let's get the fuck out of the cemetery. And so we started walking because he wasn't going to have us run. And we walked up to the light, the street light that's in this particular part of the cemetery, and Himbo saw something move up the tree that was again black, but like just so fucking fast. And he just grabbed me kind of do-si-do style, because I was wearing a dress and I was still holding on to my best friend's hand, because we were walking in the cemetery. I was in the middle. It was me in the middle between Jaden and Kai. And I was still holding Jaden's hand. And Kai just grabbed me do-si-do style with my arm in a hook and started ripping me out of the cemetery so fast. My feet, I swear to God, between the two boys did not touch the ground. So yeah, he, whatever it is particularly bound to that cemetery. It can't seem to get out of the threshold barrier that sits around it. And once we were out of the cemetery boundaries, the things dropping from behind us out of nowhere behavior stopped. So something just really awky, but appears corporeal. And I would say it's a visual manifestation because Jay and Kai could see it. My eyes are really bad. I couldn't see it. It was just a black mass in an otherwise, I mean, it was a full moon that we went out, and it's our favorite cemetery to go to. It was fairly well lit, and you could see the silhouettes of all of the headstones really well. I will post a video today, hopefully to my Instagram or maybe to my TikTok for fans to see this cemetery. It's a beautiful cemetery. And from what I was reading, hidebehinds tend to be active at night. And I kind of thought that they tended to be around a place. So I don't have enough information yet. I'm still working on kind of discerning what is there, but my husband's like, hi, we're not going to be doing too much of this activity until I can get a fucking like bicycle helmet on your head. Because every time we go here at night to do spooky walks, shit from behind us drops from the sky and I don't want you to get concussed. Shit, you're not. I have to wear like a bicycle helmet the next time we go for a night walk there, because giant smashing things fall from nowhere right behind us trying to drive us out. And if that shit conks me on the head without a helmet, I could fucking die. One of those fucking piece, it was a piece of street, right? As big as my like pavement. So it had like tar and little pebbles and shit. And it must have been broken off from the pavement of the road, but dropped from at least 25 feet in the air down behind us and was bigger than my head. If it had hit my head, I don't know how the fuck I would have lived through that. So yeah, until I get a football helmet, a bike helmet, some kind of helmet, I'm going to go to Goodwill and start looking. But yeah, I have to wear a helmet now, to walk there at night. We don't seem to have problems during the day. But we have done two spooky walks, in the last several months there. And stuff drops out of nowhere. And I thought things like, okay, what if it was like raccoons or like some kind of animal up in the trees above us? Except that it is happening in places where there aren't trees above us. There are maybe some around us where like if something was sitting in it and throwing things, but the things that were falling out of the nowhere from directly behind us did not, they seemed so big, I don't know how an animal of that size would have been able to lug them up a tree. A head-size rock up a tree? If a raccoon could do that, I would be impressed. I don't know enough about raccoons. Maybe they can do that. But damn! No, for fuck sure, a possum couldn't. And I don't know any other local wild. A bobcat? We don't have bobcats in my cemetery. I would be shocked. We have bobcats maybe in some of our rural areas, like way out in the country where I live, but not in the fucking middle of town, even in the timber there. No. And I don't think bobcats throw things like that. I don't have an animal explanation. I don't have a person explanation, because if it was a person, they physically couldn't move as fast as Jay and Kai witnessed them moving. Even if Kai and Jay's adrenaline was affecting their perception, if my husband thought it was a human being, he would have just gone to fight it. But a human being could not have moved, because he couldn't see it. He saw it like in the distance from us while we were walking, right? And then somehow something got behind us that we could not view, and things were dropping out of nowhere. And my husband thought, okay, I can't see it anymore. Maybe this is your guard dog that's a part of the cemetery trying to warn us to leave. And as we were walking forward, once we got to the streetlight, he saw something move up a tree. And it was, he's like, no human being is shaped like that, nor could a human being move in that manner or at that speed. So what I want you to understand about this particular ghost story and spooky walk story is that my husband is a veteran. I know exactly how many people he has ganked in the military. I know his fights otherwise. I know him to be a badass motherfucker. I trust he has great night vision. He has excellent night vision. And he's not really like, he's not a pussy, guys. So when he grabbed me to tactically retreat, he was like, I don't know how to fucking fight this. I don't have a gun on me right now. So we have to get the fuck out. Oh, tactically retreated. And, cause I was kind of like, wow, some great necromancer I am, just retreating from the cemetery because I got the shit scared out of me. And my partner was like, yeah, and you lived. Shut the fuck up. He's like, I wanted you to be alive. That was how that was going to go. So something exists in this particular cemetery, and I don't. It could just be like, so spiritualists believed that it was, I'm pretty sure it's the spiritualists, not the Theosophical Society. They're not always the same thing, and sometimes they differ on things, and I don't remember which one it is. I'm pretty sure it's the spiritualists the reason that they didn't like cemeteries and preferred cremation is that along with your body, you have an astral body, like a collection of your astral spirit or whatever the fuck it is. You have an astral body along with your physical body, right? And when you're cremated, your astral body is destroyed in the way that your physical body is destroyed. And it can help you, I think, move on into your next phase better. But if you're buried, your astral self apparently is bound into the earth and lingers and has residual energy that hangs around where your physical body is lingering too. And it takes time. It eventually will decay and die, but it's not as quickly as it is with cremation. So maybe the activity that exists within this cemetery is just a whole lot of old ass collected astral energy. I haven't been able to figure it out yet. So this cemetery has been kind of my cemetery pet project, except that because of its energy can be at times really dangerous, I have to break it up. I don't spend all of my time bonding with one singular cemetery. I'll work with, you know, I'll just kind of have like a main one and then some other ones that I work with that are local. Just to kind of break it up, because sometimes I just can't handle all of the same place. But I'll have one that I'll focus and do my primary stuff at and do ritual at and so on and so forth. So this one is very popular. I think it exists nearly in the center of our town. I think there's quite a few ley lines that go through it. It's on a high place. It has a lot of different spiritual factors that make it interesting. It is the cemetery that is closest to that spiritualist camp that was started in the late 1800s at the height of the spiritualist movement that exists within my town. They're a stone's throw from each other, and they are on the same range of bluffs. I live in the Mississippi Valley. So the Mississippi is a giant, super long river, right? It's one of the third biggest in the world. There's the Amazon, the Nile, and the Mississippi. They're the three main big rivers, right? And so the Mississippi used to flip-flop around like a snake. The beautiful patterns of where we can track where the Mississippi River once flowed look like beautiful, coiled, wavy hair. It's just gorgeous to me. And so the Mississippi River has limestone bluffs that are all around it. And I'm pretty sure that the Ozark area is because of the way the Mississippi River and limestone interact with each other. We've got that up here where I live. We have gorgeous, gorgeous bluffs that the Mississippi has carved out of limestone. and create just beautiful, high spiritual places. They were frequently sacred to the indigenous folks that lived here before the white folks came and took it. One of these such bluffs that is local but on the other side of the river is a sacred space known as the Hopewell Indian Mounds. The Hopewell Nation is a considered a more ancient indigenous nation. I know that a lot of people consider many indigenous nations to no longer exist and to be a thing of the past, you know, to all be ancient. And no, there are many tribes that can trace their lineages and the ancestry and history of their tribes back to ancient times, but that are still like modern nations. My understanding of the Hopewell Nation is that it was an ancient nation that does no longer exist. That's my understanding from the plaques that I've read at the Albany Indian Mounds, the Albany Hopewell Mounds in Albany, Illinois. And I've been going to those mounds since I was a really small child. My grandparents built a house. I'm sorry. They bought land and built a house very close to the mounds. And so they live there, and I would walk to those mounds because it was just a couple blocks away. Now, the mounds themselves are protected land. You are not allowed to dig there, and they have caught people digging there, and those people get hella fucking fined. And to my understanding, anything dug up is reinterred. Believe there is jail time and crazy fines are included should you decide to fucking dig around at the mountains. They will fuck you up if they catch you. And to my understanding, they've caught everybody who's tried. But the mountains are energetically a very, very familiar and safe place. I love going there. It's now a place they go when I want to remember my grandfather a lot because we walked there so much. But it has a very separate energy. I've only been asked to leave there once, and I was asked to leave by way of kind of frightening me. I could see something moving through the trees and moving through the very tall grass because the grass itself was moving, and I could hear footsteps, but I couldn't actually see anything. And I kind of got that sense of like, oh, you're not welcome right now. And so it wasn't rude. It was just like, oh, you're not welcome right now. And I was like, oh, cool. I will just leave. I was very like, you do not have to tell me twice. But generally, especially when I stay on there is a paved path that does not go over any mounds. And if you want to get to mounds, you can go over a mowed path, but it's never paved. They didn't put anything over top of any of the mounds. And then there are plaques that educate you on the Hopewell Nation. There are also plaques that will identify poison sumac and poison ivy, but poison sumac specifically, because my grandmother once caught a lady picking poison sumac like it was a flower, and I think some kids ate it once. And personally, because it was always happening to white folks, I kind of thought, like, man, you fucked around and found out. But yeah, they have plaques now. I kind of felt like it was just justified, except for the kids that ate it. But my grandma, that was kind of like a separate story of once she knew some kids that ate some poison sumac. But it was at the mounds that she caught the lady picking the poison sumac. And my grandma was like horrified. And she's like, oh my God, don't do that. My mima was a really wonderful lady who knew her plants very well. She was a survivor born in the Depression era who lost her father was murdered, but not murdered when she was five. Her daddy was really, really good looking. I've never seen a picture of him, which really bums me out. But he was always described as very, very handsome. And he was a skirt chaser and a lady killer. And he was cheating out on my great-grandmama and with his best friend's wife. And so then his best friend and him went hunting and he got shot in the hip in a hunting, quote unquote, accident, quote unquote. You know what's really close to your hip? Your penis. And I'm not trying to speak ill of the dead, but he died of infection several days later. And it was always a big family secret. And it was posted and published about in a book on local lore and facts and local history about Beaver Island. Because Beaver Island is an island in the Mississippi where this particular hunting accident took place. See, I have toyed with many years with my husband about owning a ranch in Montana and my desire to move to Montana. But my people have long history here. And not all of that is good. I understand that that history has come at the expense of Indigenous groups. I do not want to front. But I cannot control the fact that my folks, my people have been fucking around here for a long time. And so I have never wanted to move because this, the way this is my home is like in my soul. It's in my blood. Not necessarily in my soul. I feel like my soul is more connected to my past lives, which have been all over the place. But something in my blood is like, here, this is home. That river, she is familiar to me. The limestone, the trees, this is my home. And even though I feel just as at home in the mountains as I do in the Mississippi River Valley, there is just something that doesn't really quite compare to the way I love my home. I love all the seasons here. I love the trees. Anyway, I won't bore you with how much I fucking love Iowa. I live in podunk fucking nowhere, and there are many reasons why it's annoying. Specifically because, like, you know, there probably wouldn't be a great big queer scene in fucking Montana either. but, you know, there isn't one in fucking bumfuck Iowa neither. This got rambly. This entire episode has been one giant ramble. So, hey, this entire episode has been one giant ramble, but if you're still with me, ooh, gold star, congratulations. Mwah, ass kisses from me to you. Here's what's on my necromantic agenda for today. So, I told you about the cemetery. I will pop over and make a quick TikTok so you can see some of the views and some of the places that I'm talking about and some of the spirits that I'm talking about. But I'm working on cleansing the place. So I just restocked a bunch of my herbs. So I'm going to be making a purification packet that I can safely bless one of the spirits that I have in that cemetery with. And so I am going to be using avocado peels as a nature safe jar. And then I will be packing it full of protection herbs that I want to bless this spirit with and tucking that in near the headstone of this particular spirit. And I'll also be doing some burnt offerings and things like that in the place too. But I want to bless this particular spirit with this particular protection packet. I'm going to be, angelica root's going to be one of the main ingredients therein. And I've got to go prep avocado skins. Thanks, guys. Love ya. It's very frustrating. I'm not good at anything yet, so I frequently, frustratingly just stare at stuff going, what does it mean? Okay, so hi, and we're back with part two of this podcast, and I'm looking at my wedding ring right now. My husband and I are having a really fun discussion. We have been watching The Witcher. I believe you're also Slavic, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
Are you also Slavic, or is it just me who's Slavic?
I have like Scottish, Norse.
Okay, so not Slavic. Okay, so
more Swedish, Norse.
Okay, that makes sense. My people still fucked with them heavy, so I
do.
I think it's interesting. So my partner and I are culturally very westernized, but we connect a lot with our ancestors and our heritage because that resonates for us better. I am Welsh, Scottish, Irish, English, Dutch, German, Baltic and Slavic. I don't have as many, Lithuanian very specifically, and then outward from there through the Slavic nations. My husband is Celtic, Norse, and San Carlos Apache Nation. So those are fun things that we resonate and connect with. But I'm big Slavic Baltic lady, and we both really enjoy. So you've got to understand that there is some interesting overlaps in cultures between the Norse Vikings, the Slavic people, and the Baltic people. They are still each individually their own unique cultures, and they have separate things. Like, for example, I'm Lithuanian specifically in the Baltic region. So there are things that are from Latvia that are a little bit different and things from Estonia that are a little bit different. But these are still, I kind of look at it, I always look at these little countries kind of like American states for size ratio. And for example, I have family who is from a different state. So
even though they're like right across the river. I'm rambling, but what I'm trying to say is that we tend to mix around as people and share similar ideas and themes and concepts. We find that all over the world. We find that all over with people. And so what I love about the Lithuanian people specifically is that they didn't just mix their things with the Norse culture. They mixed a lot of Vedic. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing that wrong, into their culture as well. And they were just really cool. At one point, the capital, Vilnius of Lithuania, was a place, one of the very few places where Islamic, Jewish, and Christian folks could exist in a really nice harmony for, I don't know, a decent amount of time. And so I really like The Witcher. That was a giant 3-minute ramble to tell you guys that I'm Slavic and I like The Witcher. So that I could get back on the topic of enchanting jewelry. I am so sorry to the poor folks who listen to me. Shut up. So we're you're in with Hannah and Himbo, who is steady making fun of me because he listens to me ramble first, guys, and it just makes fun of me for it the whole time. I don't think it's fair that you will only actually make fun of me, though, when I'm not recording. I think that you should definitely read me for the people.
I saved the best gold for my wife.
So yeah, we really like The Witcher, and we were talking, we had like a 30-minute decompress about the fact that we were both separately at work last night, and we watched the season 2 finale separately. Then how do you know so much about it? You talked about it like you knew all of the stuff.
And what up to where we watched, which was...
No, you talked about stuff that happened in episode 8, sir.
You talked about...
No, you did too. Nuh-uh. You said you watched...
I didn't watch anything okay. Past the one episode where... He tracks down Yennefer and takes back...
Season. Okay, spoiler alert!
I haven't spoiled anything. Boy, wait till you find out who the real bad guy is.
We're not
Which, going... by the way, I predicted like a boss.
He does predict things. But we are not going to give you any spoilers for the show. Please do not worry.
Speak for yourself.
We are not. We are going to honor the people who haven't had a chance to watch it and don't want it spoiled for them, or I will punch your noodle.
So, Lambert...
Getting back on topic. Getting back on topic. We had a really fun debrief about The Witcher that we have sort of been halfway watching together. But maybe not. I loved the games. And I enjoy Slavic culture. But the medallions are cool in the show. The medallions are cool in the games. And it got me thinking about the medallions that I wear and some of the like practices and things that I really want to hone. I was trying to figure out for the year of 2022 what skills that I really wanted to start like digging into and working hard on. And I was like, oh, jewelry enchanting sounds like some dope shit. And I was like, I'd have to really work on the mechanics of that. And figure out what I want to do and just like work out on tinkering how I'm going to figure that out. And I thought of starting with my wedding rings, mine and my husband's. And so I have a rainbow moonstone wedding ring that I wear in place of my first wedding ring. My first wedding ring was my grandmother's. And now that like one of the tiny diamond sets went out and went missing, and it catches on all of my latex and gloves that I have to wear for work. I only wear it for special occasions because it was my grandmother's and it's beautiful and I don't want it to be damaged. So I wanted a placeholder ring for when I could, just for every day to be on my finger. And my husband bought me this beautiful rainbow moonstone ring. And it does weirdly change color from time to time. But I was sitting looking at it on my finger because it's oftentimes very blue and purpley. It has beautiful purple flashes in it. So it's just our party. And I'm looking at it, admiring my finger, talking about enchanting my wedding ring. So that's why I was looking at it. And it, right before me, bleached. And it went completely colorless. And it was just like, what the fuck? Because it happened before my eyeballs. Like, I've never, like, I've caught it later and been like, why are you, why? Why are you, because it happens. And then it'll just, I'll leave it alone and not pay attention to it. And eventually it goes back and it's not like bleached looking anymore. And I'm not worried about it. But like it happened before my eyeballs, like right before me. I was like, whoa, what the fuck? And then I'm like, what does it mean? I don't know. I don't know. I have never been the crystal person. I have had one rock thing. I've always collected rocks. I've collected rocks since I was yay high to a grasshopper. I had a friend who was a geologist who used to go and pull rocks out of mines for me in Colorado and Utah and polish them or cut them and do different stuff. Because I collected rocks and was a nerdy little lonely autistic kid. So I made friends with an adult man geologist. Thankfully, he was a safe person. He was a very safe friend who gave me lots of rocks. But I don't feel them vibrate. I used to work in a metaphysical shop surrounded. I have once beheld a giant, wasn't that one? It was quartz, right? It was a big ass, I think it was at least 50 to 75 pound quartz orb. And that is the closest I've felt to being like, whoa, the energy over this is huge. But also, when you're carrying 75 pounds of breakable money, you might feel it vibrate too. So I don't know what kind of sensitivities I have to gain to enchant jewelry, because I don't really feel like I can go into a metaphysical shop and kind of catch a vibe and feel the energies of a place. I'm sensitive enough to get that stuff. But I can't hold a singular crystal typically or any rock and be like so connected and the moons open up and it is so holy. Yeah, I don't get that. I am very jealous of the people that do. And I know some people who like are very, very in tune. I definitely think that, so I'm an animist. Anyway, I'm pretty sure that's the right word for that. But it just means that, like, you think that kind of everything is a little bit sentient or has a spirit to it. So it might communicate differently from you. It might have different energy frequencies from you, but it is like a being. And I try not to anthropomorphize things that are, but you like, it's everything is connected. So everything is a little bit spiritual. I don't know. I'm not describing this right, but it's like, the rocks and the trees are my friends. That's what I'm trying to say with that.
Oh, you didn't know you were watching The Sound of Music?
That's not The Sound of Music. That is the Mato Aka Disney ripoff that we don't watch anymore. That was a bad version of that. I don't know what, just around the river bend. I don't know. Or Colors of the Wind. The rocks and the trees are my brothers. I don't know if our listeners are hanging in to this point, because we're 40 minutes into an episode by now.
Your suspicions about what's happening, probably right.
You know, I am very open about what I do with my listeners. They might know that we're having a stop. It's a giggle factory. We're 10 minutes into this episode, part two, 11 minutes. Oh, gods. And hell's bells. I haven't even really talked about the whole enchanting jewelry thing. So, this particular episode is just for the diehard fans. That's the whole thing. And also, once again, shout out to Noah. So I hope this is okay, because I didn't talk to Noah beforehand, but I'm pretty sure he's cool with this. So my friend Noah, is also a practitioner and is just a continued source of encouragement in my life. And someone who shares with me bits about their practice and recently had a very cool experience. And I love getting to hear about those and like see other people's magic flourishing. And so those are kind of the vibes I'm looking into. It was just the solstice, okay? It was just the winter solstice. And I am trying very hard to get into the Morgan Morana Morena Mazana vibes here
with the goddess of winter and death and witchcraft, crows, roots, and getting, so I love to make my magic reflective of nature. And so this is the high season of winter. This is the long night, man. From here, the sun is coming back 2 minutes every day to get us towards spring. But like spirit has been heavy on like, this is the time for nestling in your nest, safe and warm, and doing fun things and eating good foods and reaping the harvest and benefits of joy, because you cannot toil all year long. We should not. Spring is for fucking and fighting. You know, you've got summertime. All is over fucking and fighting. But you've got seasons where you're supposed to be busy in the fields, toiling, working together and building your communities, right? You have the harvest time where there's fucking tons of work to bring all that shit in. Winter is supposed to be for your enjoyment. So for the solstice, I fucking watched Witcher. It felt great. I stayed in fucking bed. And Spirit was like, yeah, you're supposed to be resting. Stop fucking thinking that you have to be productive every goddamn minute. But while you're resting, it's still good to take a minute and like lay out what you're gonna do. But whenever we're about to gauge in an activity or manifestation or a plan for our lives, I'm looking up ahead at 2022. What do I want to lay out? So while you're resting, like it's good to take a minute if you can. Remember that you're supposed to be focusing on rest first, but like lay out kind of your plans, even if you're just dreaming in your head before you even write it down. Take some time, because that's focusing on your roots. So that you can get the energy for your seeds to grow or whatever. It's a metaphor. It doesn't have to be correct. So my lovelies, one of my 2022 goals is going to be working out different jewelry enchantments, like very specifically, because my first step, like I understand like praying over your jewelry or different whatevers, but like, I really want to work out the mechanics in how I work through energy and how I transfer energy to see if I can transfer energy with intention into an object. Now, I'm kind of wondering if there is some Reiki basis here, because I thought Reiki was about like energy work and energy transference. I don't know as much about it as I wish. Okay, so heads up, 7up. I'm sorry if it's a little bit louder now or if there's background sounds. I don't know if there are, but we're recording out in our vehicle so that we cannot have the house noise. And my husband's does not have my strong Slavic blood, so he cannot withstand the cold like me. He's a little baby.
So you are wearing a shirt and a sweatshirt, and I'm over here in just a shirt.
No, I am in a tank top and a very thin sweatshirt and athletic capri pants.
Shirt.
It is, I don't know how many cold degrees, it's December in Iowa, but you is okay, you was a desert people, it's alright. It's a moist heat! Yeah, that's an Iowa summer. The corn makes a moist heat, and now that we've lost 90% of our Iowa wetlands, we get a derecho every year. That's hurricane winds in a straight line that'll rip trees out of the fucking ground. We had one in August of 2020 that absolutely decimated our power grid. And now in 2021, we had one in fucking December because we overfarm the goddamn land. Thankfully, there are some agriculturalists, gosh, who are trying to work on that problem and restoring our wetlands and restoring our trees. But like, it's McFucked up. We're getting derechos now. I'm off topic, but I'm always here to talk about trees. So as a Lithuanian, I don't consider myself exactly a person of Romuva, which is not, I've had people hear that and think I mean Romani, and I do not. Romuva is Lithuanian paganism, but I'm not initiated into that practice. And I think the first step is speaking their language, but I do read about it and I love Lithuanian prayers. And Lithuanian prayers are always about like, go fucking talk to your trees. You upset, talk to your trees. You happy, talk to your trees. Talk to your fucking trees when you get married. Talk to your fucking trees. All the God, talk to your trees, bitch. I used a very colonizer English paraphrase, but that's the prayer. So that is to say that I'm always here to talk about trees. I feel so bad for anybody who's in this episode. I'm sorry, guys. This was a rambly-dambly one.
So the problem's really with them if they expect anything different.
Yeah, if you're this far into my podcast, you know that this is what happens now. So yeah, I'm working on projects where as I learn things, I'm going to share them, because I think that sharing knowledge is really great as long as it is not sacred and closed knowledge that only, like, I believe in sacred practices and that certain things should be held sacred. And I treat them with respect, but I also like when I can find things that are universal that can be practiced by anyone, sharing them, because I think that it's really hard to find access to information. And I do not consider myself anything beyond a very intermediate witch, very intermediate practitioner. I have been on and off since I was 13, really steadily now for, I don't know, however many years. It's years now. And that has really helped shape me. And so I have been a person searching for knowledge, and it's really hard to find sometimes. So if I've got some, I want to share it. I wasn't a librarian. You have to have a very specific degree for that. But I worked in a fucking library because I like books and knowledge. So yeah, working on enchantments is a big thing that I want to fucking try. I think that that has some cool possibilities, and I want to see what I can do with it. Specifically in, well, like what kinds of intentions can I put into things, and how can I test those theories, and what evidence can I gather about it? I'm not like a scientist, but I tend to approach magic from a very mad scientist perspective. Like, I'm going to look for some evidence, but I'm going to do this like sloppy, chaotically, and possibly dangerously. I have literally had spells blow up in my face. I said that in a metaphysical shop once, and this lady's eyeballs like were just like, "You are dumb." And it's like, yeah, I know. I'm aware. It's why I have a keeper, because he's literally had to put out actual fires I've started. So one time I was doing, I love to do tablet spells. Tablet spells go way, way back. Ancient Greece had some really popular curse tablets. We found artifacts of curse tablets, which is great. I love them because they're kind of like, "May Sisyphus have anal worms forever, that rancid cunt." Like, it's like an ancient curse tablet. Or like, "May the gods eat his penis." Like, just love them. So I make tablet spells with wax. And then I will put ingredients into the melted wax, and it forms a tablet. Then I can pop the tablet out, and I can do different things with it. I've also made a wax tablet with, I sculpted lips out of wax and then bound the lips. And I didn't direct it at anyone specific. I wanted to first just see what I could craft with it. But the idea is it's an anti-gossiping tablet. But you would want to put a tag lock and some identifiers to that specific person in the tablet of like, whose lips are you trying to bind? And you can even put like their name in the mouth that you sculpt in wax, and then close that and then bind that. You can then put and inscribe their name into the back of the tablet part. And then if you ever need to break that particular working, you can break the tablet and then melt the tablet and burn any remnants of like left. You really want to like, I prefer to like kill it, double tap it. If I'm doing working like that, you may be able to break them, just break the tablet and break the working, but I like to be extra. But of that particular spell, I've never actually performed it for myself in direction of anyone. I've just put one together to see if I could do it. So when I can feel certain energies when I'm doing certain workings, because I can't always conjure that energy. I can't always make something feel like, I made an anger water once that felt like fucking uranium, and my mother was bothered by it so much she could feel it in my house, and she's like, "You get rid of that. You do all the stuff you have to do to get rid of that." She's like, "That is like plutonium. I hate it. Get rid of that." I've made some things that you could feel the energy of quite powerfully. And then I've made duds. So I found that it isn't always about putting ingredients in a pot. It's really about the energy that I'm summoning and the intention that I'm focusing and how zoned into that I am when I'm doing it. And I can't do that every time. Sometimes I'm trying really hard and I just don't got it. And sometimes I don't fucking need ingredients at all. I just need to be walking and praying, and I can summon that up and feel all of it, and I'll be like, okay, so I don't have a pot, I don't have a fire, I'm gonna put all of this back into the ground with every step I take. That's why I recommend meditative walking. Hey, Himbo. So what do you think is one of your favorite parts of your work as a necromancer?
The sex.
Well, like, okay, cool.
With a live body.
Yeah, that did sound dicey for a minute. We do be sometimes having, I don't be talking to dead folks and be in the act, but the act itself, can be an energy summoner that can be used in other places. I like that you're transparent about your favorite parts. Which cemetery would you say that you're most bonded with? Because I know that you do a lot of work with, like, veteran graves in different parts of different cemeteries, but do you have one?
Springdale.
Yeah.
Just Springdale, I guess.
Yeah. You've done a lot of work in that very specific one. I think I've talked about that on an episode. It's the infected place. It's where the spooky walks have taken place. It's where there, I've found evidence of other people's rituals there. I found workings hanging in trees, where I've also found condoms and beer cans and different shit. Like, people have been, people, it's a high place that has good, a lot of energy that you can harvest, and people like to get fucked up and go fuck in the cemeteries and do rituals there. That is not a part of our practice. I also like to fuck in my bed. Not trying to do that on some dead lady's grave. Like, no. But Springdale has these weird headstones that are, like, bed size flat. And I'm like, oh, these people were being gross. No wonder Edna's pissed. There's this one spirit. She bit my husband once when he was cleaning off her grave. Because she's just angry. And I'm like, I know, people have been fucking in your space. But it ain't us, so calm down. But yeah, the spirits there are restless as fuck. And I think it's interesting because the spiritualists were like, hey, all those dead people that didn't get cremated have that astral self that's just hanging out. It takes long to dissipate. And I don't know, but there's something there. And I just think it's possible that our bodies are tag locks that we can return to. And if we don't have that tag lock, you have to return other ways. But I don't necessarily think that being cremated completely removes you from your loved ones, like, spiritually and aspectly, whatever. I don't fucking know.
I said, but you're the death wish. You're supposed to fucking
know. I know. But I don't have all the answers. I'm really only intermediate. I've been given some really crazy pictures about what different things look like in the tapestries of energies. But I don't know everything. I'm just fucking around out here. I'm trying to fuck around and find out all the time. Okay, so this is a really long episode of rambling that I hope you enjoy. And you have all my love. I will try to talk about things with much more organization soon. But I just wanted to sit with y'all and talk at you for a minute. So, beloveds, I hope you have a great time. And I'll catch you when we do this again. Bye-bye. So this is Hannah of Graveyard Gatherings. Thanks for being here. I'll see you at the next one. All of the extra music for my podcast is my father, the great musician, Rex Stratton, and you can find him on Spotify, on YouTube, or wherever you get your music. Give him a listen. It'll make his year. Thanks so much. This is Hannah with Graveyard Gatherings. All of the extra music for my podcast is original music from my dad, Rex Stratton, and you would make his year if you gave any of his music a listen on YouTube or Spotify. Today's song is near and dear to my heart, one of my favorites. I picked it because I love it so much. Rollin' the Clover Rover from his first album, Santa at the Gulag. This has been Graveyard Gatherings. See you at the next one.